I'm Peter Hall, one of the program hosts at WNED Classical in Buffalo, New York, and I'm very pleased that the music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, well, the BPO as we call them, has come to our studio to talk about the BPO's latest Naxos recording. Joanne Folletta, so nice to see you.
Great to see you too, Peter. And you and I have been on quite a journey with these Naxos discs. I mean, we've talked about each one as it's come out, so I'm glad to be here again talking about the next one.
So, counting on my fingers and more, this is the 26th Naxos CD in over 21 years.
That's right.
Wow.
It's been an adventure. I mean, it's been an artistic journey that I could never have even imagined when we began this, and all of the different people we've recorded, from Joseph Suk to John Corigliano to Marcel Teeburg, and of course shared all of that with our Buffalo audiences, Peter. And that's been one of the best parts of it, that we get to record after we have rehearsed and performed these works.
And that's always a blessing for those of us in town to hear that. But can you remember the first Naxos recording? How did that come about?
You know, I guess it was 21 years ago, Klaus Heyman contacted me and said that he was interested in adding the Buffalo Philharmonic to his group of orchestras. And he doesn't have that many in the United States. He was working with, I think, Nashville and Albany, and wanted another orchestra, and was very interested in Buffalo, maybe because of our history of our new music that we had done and our varied repertoire, and of course the sound of Kleinhans Hall. Kleinhans Music Hall was a great extra for an orchestra to play in that acoustics. But he did tell me, as you might remember when we talked about it, that he wasn't interested in playing Brahms again, recording Brahms again, or recording Dvorak again. He wanted lesser-known composers. And with us, he especially wanted them to come from late 19th century, early 20th century Eastern Europe. So that was quite a charge to find those voices. And of course, you know, we have done a lot from early Bartok, a disc of early Bartok, to Vitislav Novak, to Joseph Suk. But we've also varied that a little bit and gone into John Corigliano's music and Charles Tomlinson Griffiths. So it became more varied as we went on.
We can talk about what it's meant for the orchestra later on, but what has it meant for you? You are at the top of your career now.
Well, it makes me very proud that the Buffalo Philharmonic has a voice all over the world. And we hear that, Peter. We hear that from people from all over saying, I heard your Respighi, I heard your Glier, I heard this wonderful piece I never heard before by Joseph Suk. It's documenting who we are in these 20 years and also making a statement about our belief in the fact that there's a lot of great music that people don't know and deserve to know. So, and for me personally, it's been a big adventure because I'm always on the lookout for new pieces, new composers, looking at scores all the time, reading CD magazines, asking friends, reading history books of composers that I don't know. And that's been fun.
Now, this is a little unfair, but what have been some highlights? I know you want to say, I love them all, but there must have been some that really stood out.
Well, one that stood out at the beginning was the Charles Tomlinson Griffiths, and I chose him especially because he's from our region. Griffiths was born in Elmira, as you know, and lived, unfortunately, a very short life. In fact, he died in the flu pandemic. Right as his career was blossoming into something world-renowned, but to do his music, to know that he came from a region very close to us was very important. But then in later, the Glier, Ilya Muromets, what an amazing adventure that was. Respighi, the Rome trilogy, I think that one I loved especially because it showed off the orchestra, all parts of it, the brass, the beauty of the woodwinds, the sound of the strings, our percussion that just glistened. So those are some of my favorites.
Folks who don't know you as well as we do in Western New York might not pick up on what you just said, that you like the Respighi because it shows off all the different sections of the orchestra. But that is really one of your trademarks. You love to let the musicians and the sections strut their stuff.
I do. Well, I love the orchestra. I mean, I've been with them now 20 plus years, and I love them, you know, as musicians. I love them as people. But I think they're so gifted and so talented. And in fact, Peter, you and I have talked about this. They have their own vibrant personality. They're really a group of characters, and in addition to being great musicians, I want that to show. I want them to, as you said, strut their stuff. I want them to be themselves and be free to really express themselves in these recordings.
Let's talk about the latest CD, The Tragedy of Zalame, music of Florent Schmidt. Not our first experience with this composer. Back in 2015, you introduced us to his work. We heard performances at Kleinhans, and then, of course, a recording came out. But for those just hearing that name, Florent Schmidt, who was he, and why did you call him, quote, the most important French composer you've never heard of?
Yes, and I believe that so strongly because Florent Schmidt is not a household name, but he's a very important link between the Impressionists, Ravel and Debussy, whom he knew well. He was born in the same time as those two great composers, but he lived much longer, and he, you know, knew Stravinsky well and knew the modern French composers. So he is that link between Impressionism and the new French sound. And he is very French. I mean, he's French to the core, really, but we can tell when we listen to his music that he also loved German music. He loved Strauss. He loved that kind of sort of strong, passionate music that the Germans wrote so well. And so he incorporated that into his French personality. So we get quite a mixture of German passion and maybe French subtlety and nuance in his music.
Folks listening to this podcast or the latest CD might think, maybe I should go back and pick up that earlier CD. So can you talk a little bit about the repertoire on the first Florent Schmidt CD?
Well, it contained one of my favorite pieces of his Antony and Cleopatra. And this was six tableaus that he wrote for a performance of the play. Fantastic music, and they take us from the moment that Antony arrives in Egypt, sees the queen, and falls hopelessly in love with her, to the battles that they fight with the Romans who are coming to drag him back to Rome, to his dying and her giving up her life to go to the next world to be with him. You know, when we know the play, I mean, they're both very flawed characters. I mean, she's rather scheming, and he's so in love with her, he can't think of anything else. But in the end, they're very noble in their love for each other. And Schmidt's music expresses that nobility, that kind of grandeur about them as people.
You said Cleopatra was, quote-unquote, scheming. But you've also said in the past that Schmidt had a fascination with, we'll call them femme fatale, or perhaps alluring women of questionable virtue.
Exactly, Peter, you are right. And Cleopatra's one of them. I mean, he was quite a ladies' man himself, Florent Schmidt, but he seemed attracted to these sensuous, beautiful, alluring women who are, you know, not, they don't always have the best intentions in what they're doing. And of course, Cleopatra she seduces Mark Antony, and she won't let him go. But Salome also, the Salome who dances for Herod and then demands the head of John the Baptist on a platter, a woman named Oriane is really just a wild woman who is depraved and excessive in everything she does and comes to a bad end. He loves these women. He's interested in them, and I think their characters allow him to explore all the colors of the orchestra, and it goes from music of great sensuality and poetry to wild orgies and dances. So he loves being able to do that.
Sometimes these women are described as dangerous and other times colorful. And I've heard you use that word colorful when you're talking about the music of Florent Schmidt. So this goes together.
It does. And, you know, he also had a great interest in what we used to call Orientalism, expressing the fragrance of the Far East or the Middle East, especially for people who hadn't been there. Imagine how alluring that sounded. So color enters into it in a big way because he's expressing sounds that Europeans maybe hadn't heard before, the sound of the Far East, and he uses the orchestra instruments with such skill but such imagination, mixing these colors together. And that makes these women really come to life, these alluring women. They jump off the page, and it's quite steamy, his music.
When you talk about sounds that were new with Florent Schmidt, so you're talking about maybe combinations of instruments that were not used typically?
Yeah. He's using a very large orchestra, and he's blending instruments together in a different way, especially the woodwinds. But he's also quite modern. You know, he's left behind the kind of dreamy, sort of rootless music of Debussy where it just floats. And he's really digging down rhythmically. The music is quite difficult. I remember when the orchestra saw the Antony and Cleopatra for the first time, they were really struck with how difficult it was. So he's part Stravinsky, he's part Ravel, but really himself, in which is why I think that link of who he is in French music is so important for us to know.
I'm kind of laughing inside because some of your musicians have confided to me that the music you come up with occasionally is so darn difficult.
His is. I mean, maybe all of it has they have the challenges, but his was very difficult, and I'm really proud of how they approached it. And having done the first disc with a very difficult Antony and Cleopatra, there's a battle scene in Antony and Cleopatra that's all the Battle of Actium that's almost impossible to play. It's so difficult. But how they just played that music brilliantly put them in a good position to go on with this second disc.
I understand there are two world premieres on this CD, pieces never recorded before.
Yes, let me tell about those two new ones, because they really are just discoveries that we're so proud of. One is a song, an orchestral song, and I think it's one of the greatest orchestral songs I have ever heard. This is called Musique sur l'eau, Music on the Water. It's a very romantic but also very, very sensuous piece of music. Susan Platz was our beautiful mezzo who sang this, and she said, too, that it was something she'd never dreamed, that she would find a song of this beauty, unknown, just languishing and never recorded. So that's one of my favorites on this disc. The other is a piece named La Légende, The Legend. And Schmidt had originally written this for saxophone and piano, and then later rewrote it for violin and orchestra, which is so much So much more beautiful, I think. So Nikki Chewy, our concertmaster, played this world premiere of this version. It's dark. I mean, it's really singing in the kind of alto register, and then it soars up to the top. Music without words, of course, but music of great longing, of great poetry, and really stunning. I mean, this man is so imaginative in how he varies his style from piece to piece.
Wow, 26 CDs in 21 years for the Naxos company. So I've got to ask, what's next for the BPO? What's your next Naxos adventure?
Well, Scriabin. We're in the middle of an Alexander Scriabin disc. And people might not know his orchestral music, but it's really romantic and soaring. We have already recorded his Poem of Ecstasy. And on the docket is his Symphony No. 2. So we'll hopefully get that in another year or two. We're doing another disc of Zoltán Kodály. The orchestra, I think, really excels in Hungarian music, and they just get a sense of those dances, that gypsy feeling. So we have some other pieces of Kodály we're going to tackle. I have as a personal wish list the music of Lucas Foss, because Lucas is going to be marking 100th birthday in 2022, and as his orchestra, I think we should do a CD of his music. So that and some other dream things that we hope for. So glad to be getting back and playing these wonderful pieces on stage and then recording them.
And that reminds me, this year, 2020, it's a big year for Florent Schmidt.
It is. Now, 2020 turned out to be a challenging year in many ways, but it had a very special birthday in 2020. Of course, we're celebrating Beethoven's 250th, but I don't want that to completely obscure Florent Schmidt's 150th, which is a very, very big milestone. And hopefully it might be the catalyst for more people to come to know this extraordinary composer of great breadth, of enormous repertoire, of truly individual romantic music.
Now, when I talk to folks in the audience at Kleinhans, most longtime concert goers agree without a moment's hesitation that the orchestra has just gotten better and better and better, I mean, almost before our eyes. So I'm guessing that maybe all of these recordings with Naxos have encouraged that? Is that true?
Peter, you are absolutely right. It is true. I think the orchestra has gained so much in strength, in imagination, in risk-taking because of these recordings. I remember how tentatively we approached the first one. We were all frightened, and, you know, we knew, you know, when making recordings, you have limited studio time. Would we do it? Could we do it? Could we get all this music perfectly down on disc forever? You know, we knew that would reflect on who we were for years to come. But in doing that, one or two every year, the orchestra has grown so strong and so confident. And I think that we feel that confident. I mean, I don't think it's bad to say they have a little swagger, the Buffalo Philharmonic. They do, and they enjoy playing with each other, and they're exuberant. As one person in the audience described them to me with that word, and I've always remembered it because I love that about them. They are exuberant, and I think that the recordings have helped them loosen up that way and be courageous and just sing. So, yes, our Naxos partnership has really created a new level for the Buffalo Philharmonic.
26 Naxos CDs in 21 years for the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, led by their music director, Joanne Folletta, now in her third decade as music director. you started when you were 10, 11?
You know, it seems so long ago, but in another way, it has gone by so quickly. The orchestra has changed a lot. You know, the personnel changes as people retire, and we grow stronger, I think, as we know each other better. We trust each other more, and that trust is a big part of it, too. You know, where we're willing to take risks and try music that is as difficult as Florent Schmidt and embrace it and make it our own.
The new CD is The Tragedy of Zalame, Joanne Folletta conducting the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. Music director of the BPO, Joanne Folletta, thank you so much for talking about this new compact disc.
Thank you, Peter. It's always great to have a conversation with you. Thank you from all of us.
Thank you.